Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. And I'd like to welcome you all from a hot and steamy Philadelphia on August 14th, and the weather's just getting hotter and hotter, but it's not nearly as hot as where my co-hostess for tonight is living, Deborah Sutton. Deborah, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me, Bonnie.
Well, you were really scheduled for tonight, and you were kind enough to fill in for Dr. Hooper 2 weeks ago, but I wanted you back because there are a lot of issues that we need to still discuss. And so I really do appreciate your coming back on this show on your scheduled night. Deborah is a semi-regular with us who will be more regular in this upcoming year as she finds more time. And really excited to have her. Deborah's an active member and leader in our Straight Wives Club, you know, our support for women who are going through this, you know, type of marriage and relationship. And she's written her own book on it. She also does blogging on it, and she's a wonderful support system for so many of our straight wife sisters. So I really appreciate your joining me tonight, Deborah. Is it hot in Texas?
Oh, it's always hot in Texas. We don't even have much of a winter here.
And, you know, I was going to tell people, no matter how hot it is here on the East Coast, you know, and people are just saying, oh, my God, I can't believe how hot it is. And it is hot. I still say it's better than it is in Texas, because in Texas, when it's hot, you can't breathe.
That's true.
I can breathe in the hot air. When I get to Texas and it's hot, I just can't breathe, period.
I couldn't live without air conditioning here.
How do people live there before air conditioning, Deb?
Oh, I remember when I was little, we didn't always have air conditioning. I guess we didn't know what we were missing, but then we got the one little window unit for the house, and we'd go in the cold room to cool off.
I know, but I am wondering how people survived all those years without even having any air conditioning. Those Texas summers must have really been murder, right?
Oh, yeah. We're spoiled now with the central air conditioning. And now that we've
And when
had
we talk
it,
about those Texas summers, they last 10 months long. I know that.
Yes.
It's almost always summer in Texas, for sure. So tonight we're going to talk about a few things. I found a really good article, and I'd like to read it and get some of your input on it, because I think it applies to many of our women. And I think that many of us are caretakers because we're trained to be taking care of somebody who can't love us. Not because they don't want to, but it's just not, you know, the nature of that relationship. Straight women and gay men, you know, do not really mesh together as a couple, and then there's always going to be problems. You know, I was speaking to a therapist today, and he has a practice in marriage counseling, and he said, you just don't understand how difficult keeping a, you know, good marriage is, how many obstacles there are along the way for a couple to make it through a successful relationship. And that's under the best of circumstances. And when you throw homosexuality into it, that's really the worst of circumstances, because it means that somebody in the marriage doesn't really want to be there and doesn't belong there. And so trying to make something work that's almost impossible just becomes an impossible type of situation to have to work around. Would you agree with that?
I agree. I don't think that when I, you know, look back, I just don't believe he was... My ex-husband was ever happy in the marriage because something was always wrong. So he was an unhappy man, very unhappy.
And I think that, you know, if you're starting off with without understanding what the problem is, and other things become the problem, and you never quite get to the real problem. But
right.
This article, which I thought was wonderful, it's from a blog. And it's by Karen Ann Kennedy, who's a certified health coach. And I'm wasn't familiar with her until I read this article. But there's a saying that's out there. A lot of us see it on the Internet, not my circus, not my monkeys. And I see that more and more showing up on the Internet. And I think it's really true. But she wrote a really wonderful article about it. She said, a coworker recently slipped a sign under my door with the old Polish proverb that reads, not my circus, not my monkeys. I got a really good chuckle out of it and hung it up in my office in a spot where only I could see it. Later that day, another coworker came to me with a problem. I jumped into fix-it mode, which is what I always do, and found myself getting terribly involved in everything that was happening. When the exchange ended, I reached for the file and I saw the sign hanging there. In that moment, I got it. I realized exactly what that sign meant, and I knew that one of the biggest causes of stress in my life was my need to become the ringleader of every circus in town. Why do I feel the need to fix everything and everyone in my path? To answer this question, I did what any self-respecting woman would do. I poured a glass of wine, broke out the dark chocolate, and sat down with my journal. As I look back at the pages that are in my life, I realize that Olivia Pope has nothing on me. I've been the fixer my whole life. What's wrong with that? I'm glad you asked. It's not a bad thing to be there for people. However, sometimes the best way to help people is to let them help themselves. It's like the teach a man to fish philosophy. If you always swoop in and fix everything, you deny people the opportunity to be independent and learn those important coping skills that they need to get by. Springing into fix-it mode may also signal to your friends and family that you don't have faith in their ability to take of themselves, and it can cause a lot of undue stress in your own life. And finally, if you're not careful, some unscrupulous folks will try to take advantage of your kindness. Over the years, I have found myself being sucked into all kinds of drama that I had no business being in. There were so many times when I caused myself unnecessary stress by worrying about something that didn't concern me. It takes a lot of strength to pull back from things that are going on around you, but I urge you to try. When you find yourself getting sucked into another person's circus, stop and ask yourself this. Does this situation really involve me? If the situation doesn't involve me, what is my motivation for getting involved? What will it cost me to get involved? We're talking time, money, stress, etc. Can I really bring something to the table that will help all the parties to a better resolution? What will happen if I decline to participate in this situation? If the situation doesn't really involve you, it's wise to think about why are you considering getting involved? If your motivation is to be on the latest gossip or get the upper hand in the situation, back away. If your motivation is anything less than for the good of everyone involved, you don't need to be a participant. If getting involved is going to cost you time that you don't have, sleepless nights, or strained relationships, don't get involved. It is not selfish to look out for yourself. There are some things that come with too high of a cost to justify your involvement. If you aren't going to be part of the solution, don't be part of the problem. Only get involved if you're able to be helpful. Jumping onto the pile when you can bring no added value just muddles the water. At one of the last marathons I ran, an older gentleman had fallen and was pretty badly cut up. At least 30 people were just standing around him. I'm not entirely sure what everyone was doing, but upon seeing such a mob, I continued to run. Does that make me a bad person? I don't think so. Had I stumbled on the man and he was alone, I would have surely stopped and offered my assistance. But at that moment, with so many people there, I didn't feel there was anything else I could add to the situation. In the end, as you go through these questions, it's a good idea to play out what will happen if you decline to participate. Will my absence create an even bigger situation? Will not participating hurt me or hurt someone else? This still doesn't mean that you have to get involved. It's just helpful to know what the consequences will be. The main point here is that if you're anything like me, you've already got a lot of things on your plate in your own life. I'm sure each of you is managing your own circus and your own monkeys. So the question then becomes, do you really have the capacity to take on someone else's circus and someone else's monkeys? If getting involved causes you to lose your peace of mind, step away. I guarantee you there are other ringleaders out there who would be happy to jump in and take your place. I just love that article, Deb.
Oh, I love it, too. And it, you know, I was the oldest of 11 kids, and being the big sister, I was always getting involved in my siblings' problems.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, coming out of this, I no longer felt like I wanted to be part of that. And you do prevent people from learning, you know, the consequences for their mistakes. And, you know, at some point you're not really helping them.
I think a lot of us are caretakers by nature. And I think that in general, women are either takers or givers. And I think there's far more givers when it comes to women than there are takers. And I think we're socialized that way. We're brought up to be the mothers in the family, that women are supposed to be people pleasers. You know, we're socialized very differently than men are. Men are supposed to be the ones supporting the family and, you know, protecting the family, where women are the ones who are supposed to be taking care of the family. So a lot of times I think it's just due to our upbringing and the way that the society sees us. Many of us become non-assertive because we have high expectations. We don't know how to ask for what we want for ourselves. And I think this is part of the problems that people have in marriages, because they don't know how to speak up and how to be assertive. Instead, they're afraid that, you know, they'll be rejected if they say what's on their mind. I know that many of our women live in that kind of fear also. They don't want to say something that's going to hurt their husband's feelings, or they don't want to say something that's going to make them not love them, you know, when they don't really know what the problem is. Or sometimes their husbands will say, well, you're not really being very supportive to me. You know, a good wife would be more supportive and think about my feelings. And I think that's what we do. We're always thinking about other people's feelings and not putting ourselves first. Have you seen that also with the women that you are friends with?
Yes. You know, and it happened to me in my marriage. His problems really took over my life, and he didn't really want anybody else in my life. He wanted all the attention on him. So, you know, and I see it with women all the time because we are caretakers and we are brought up that way.
And it seems that when people ask you for help, you know, we want to be helpers. That's our nature, to help. But it's not always helping us. And
right.
I know those people who are also, you know, what Dr. Phil calls addicted to chaos. We had talked about that once before on this show. And when you have people who are addicted to chaos, which I think is like a really good diagnosis, that I really wasn't familiar with that diagnosis until I read his article. You know, I couldn't quite pin it on something. Like, I just didn't understand exactly what people are talking, always creating problems, and why can't you just have a simple life? Why are you always looking to create, you know, problems when there's no problems to be created? And, you know, I read this site on, you know, I read about this on Dr. Phil's site from last year, and, you know, it was, like, very eye-opening to me that people are addicted to chaos. And if they're smooth sailing going, then they're just not happy. You know, that they have to have some kind of chaos going on.
Yes. I had the feeling at times like, well, you know, like when's the other shoe going to drop? You know, if things were going along smooth. I don't think you love the chaos, but
I think that some people are really happy just being in a chaotic situation. Like if things are calm and peaceful, they really have difficulty with it. And there was an article in Psychology Today where it says, are you addicted to chaos? It says, last year three independent things happened that, and this was also another blog by Mark Griffiths, Dr. Mark Griffiths. He said, last year three independent things happened that led me to writing this article. Firstly, I received an email from one of my blog readers who wrote, I am a recovering addict. I still find it hard to admit even after time in therapy and the support of my loved ones, but to say out loud it can sometimes help. One part of my therapy which really did strike a chord was something called chaos addiction. It was suggested to me that my addictive behaviors were fueled by a need to constantly have things in my life that were in flux, to experience a predictability unpredictable. Looking over my life, it hit home. I love it. I'd love it if you might think about sharing this with your site's readership. Then he says, secondly, I was given a CD by one of my friends that included the song Addicted to Chaos by the group Megadeth. And thirdly, I was watching the film Chasing Lanes, where the lead character in the film, Doyle Gibson, is told that his AA sponsor was addicted to chaos rather than to alcohol. I never came across the term chaos addiction prior to the email that I was sent. As far as I was aware, there had never been any empirical research on the topic, although Dr. Keith Lee did write a book in 2007, Addicted to Chaos, about his own experiences on the topic. Using case studies, the book examines individuals that have become, quote, addicted to intensity out of the chaos and toward mind-body harmony, higher consciousness, and deeply spiritual transformation. More specifically, in a culture where the extreme theme has become the norm, people are increasingly seduced into believing that intensity equals being alive. When that happens, the mind becomes wired for drama and the soul is starved of meaningful purpose. This type of life may produce heart-pounding excitement, but the absence of this additive energy can bring about withdrawal, fear, and restlessness. And he goes on to talk about it, and also, like I say, Dr. Phil had talked about it, and people who need to constantly have excitement going on in their lives, like if things are going smoothly, then they have to create problems. You know, they're not happy just with peaceful things. And so tying it back into the first article, you know, about not my circus, not my monkeys, some people just, you know, they just revolve around just having chaos in their life, and they keep trying to draw you in. they keep trying to make you side with them or to get you to be part of the people who, you know, are on their side, teaming people against each other because this is part of the chaos that they try to create. So
yes.
I think that as caretakers, we really get drawn into a lot of this. And I think that's our nature. We have to learn how to avoid it, how to set boundaries. You know, one of the problems that I think our women have is that we've never really learned how to set boundaries correctly. Do you think that's true,
Deb? That's so true. And coming out of this, and that is one of the first things I began to work on, was setting boundaries, because I had poor boundary skills.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. My life is peaceful now.
Mm-hmm.
Very peaceful. But, you know, it was never peaceful up until this point. I mean, I learned these things very late in life.
And, for instance, can you give me an example of boundaries that you couldn't set in your marriage?
I wasn't able to say no to anything that he wanted. I mean, I could try saying no, but he created such hell for me if I said no that I always ended up, you know, giving in. Whether it was, you know, buying a new car, a new boat, it was always about something that he wanted. And it was usually with money that I had saved from working, you know, that he wanted my money. He wanted my savings to buy these things. And he always got his way. He always wore me down.
I think a lot of it is also control, that many of these men know how to emotionally manipulate you, which turns into control. I know that a lot of women don't have a say, so they can spend their money. You know, the man's in charge of the money. He's in charge of where you're going. He's in charge of everything. And I think that comes from living with someone who doesn't give you choices. Many of these guys are really very set in their ways, and they're very boxed in because they're so afraid that people are going to find out their secret that they're a gay man. So they try to control everything within their environment, including the wife, so that, you know, the secret can really stay closed in a box.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we become conditioned when our husbands tell us no, and we stop asking in every sense of the way. Whether it be for what we need at home, whether it be sexually, emotionally. You know, when you keep hearing no, or you're made to feel rejected, you just stop asking, feeling that you're asking too much. Did that happen to you?
Yes. Oh, I just wanted to say, you know, when I would say no, you know, that I didn't want to buy this and I wanted to save the money, he would always say he wanted a divorce. And this is not why I gave in to him. I would leave and go somewhere and say, get a divorce. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't always control. Sometimes our money was separate. He liked our money being separate and us having separate accounts. But he didn't always control all the money. I paid the bills. With our money.
Sometimes they're happy to have you pay the bills.
Yes, but anything.
It doesn't mean you have control.
Yes. No,
you're
I
paying the bills.
Right.
They just make you think you're having a say when you're actually paying the bills.
Right.
But most men, I think, you know, aren't that generous. They really like to control the money. They hide it. They have things they have to do with it. They need money to cheat on you with, without you asking where the money's going. So I have found that to be more so the case, why men like to control that money.
Yes, if he wanted to go out, you know, he had money to go out. He went out.
Mm-hmm. And they do. One of the things that you have, Deborah, you have a blog called Signs of a Gay Husband. Am I saying that right? Is that the name of your blog, too?
That's the name of my blog.
I know it's also the name of your book.
Yes.
And it's on Facebook under Signs of a Gay Husband, where you have your personal blog and articles. And you wrote a really good article about grieving today. that I think is a really important article. And was there something specific that made you write that?
I wrote two articles today that I posted, and I'm trying to see which one you're talking about.
Well, here's one on finding closure. Was that today you posted this?
Yes.
And okay, I wasn't sure which one came first. But this was a really excellent article, because you are a really excellent writer. You know, from your blogs, it really make people think. If you don't mind, I'd like to read it. Is that okay?
Oh, that's okay.
It says, with homosexuality being more acceptable these days and the change in gay marriage laws, I was hoping to see a decline in women needing support. Sadly, this has not happened. There are more women needing support daily. Even though gay marriage is legal, there are still those gay men who will remain in the closet. It's one thing to keep your privacy and choose to remain single, but to marry a woman in order to put on an appearance of straight is a whole different story. I do take into consideration that some men marry young and they are confused about their sexuality. They marry hoping those same-sex attractions will go away, and their love for their wives, they love their wives the best they can. At some point, they know the same-sex attraction's not going away. Most of these men are acting on their desires for men while married to women. Still, these men will not admit they are gay. Their wives usually find out by finding gay porn stored in the computer's history or texts from or to a man. Even when these men are confronted with the evidence, they still deny they are gay. They are out there having sex with men, but will come home and have sex with their wives to prove themselves that they cannot be gay. These are the men Bonnie calls straight gay husbands. They feel out of place in either world, but find it easier to pass as straight. They have a straight identity, but sexual desires for men. These are men who live a secret gay life, and if you get a divorce, they will go out and marry another woman. At what point do they stop blaming society or their parents for their own poor choices? While it's true society has given gay men a hard time, still there are gay men who would never think of marrying a woman. There are gay men who would never consider sex with a woman. At what point does the closeted gay husband take responsibility for the harm they cause others? From what I have read about these gay men who bear no responsibility, the answer to this question is they never do. They feel as though they are the injured party, as if they gave up their years for you. Don't wait for an admission or an apology from the gay straight husband. After some years of marriage where you know something is off and you are waiting around to find that proof or for him to confess, you may be waiting a very long time for something that's not going to happen. I think you reach a point where you know he's gay, but you did not actually walk in on him having sex with a man. Don't waste years looking for that proof or waiting for his confession. Some women do track their husband's activity or hire private detectives because they need that closure. Closure these men are never going to give. I think that if we have to spy on someone else in the marriage, it's already over. I do understand needing and wanting that closure. I think you need to do whatever it takes to bring you the closure you need. Once you have the closure, you can then begin to heal and move forward with your life. These men even rob you of this truth of enclosure because they're afraid if you know the truth will cost them more in a divorce. By the time you are searching for online for signs of a gay husband, you have been seeing so many things in your marriage to bring you to this point. You are beginning to wake up to the painful truth. We can live in denial for a very long time. The fact is, we don't want to believe our husbands are gay. This is the last thing that we search for. It is the last thing we want to believe about the men we marry. It is much more difficult to move forward without proof or a confession. I was fortunate enough to have some proof, but I still wanted that confession. It would have helped with closure. It is possible to move forward with a confession or proof. We wives are never meant to live in the closet with a gay man who cannot accept himself. It plays mind games with your psyche, and it's very toxic and destructive, living in the confusion of the closeted gay husband. Closure will happen when you're ready to let go. And I think that was really very beautifully, you know, stated. Because the problem is that some women, to them, closure would be walking in and actually seeing their husbands having sex with a man. That's what they need to see in order to have their proof. And I always say that's totally ridiculous. You know, your proof should just be that you're unhappy in a marriage and that you're not getting the support you need from a husband and not making a million excuses as to why the marriage isn't working. You know, if the marriage isn't working and you're doing everything to be a good wife, then there's a problem in the marriage and the problem isn't you. And here's what I never understand, Deborah. You know, 50% of all marriages in this country get divorced. And it's not because they have a gay husband. It's because people
right.
say, you know what, this marriage isn't working. It's not fitting my needs. It's not doing for me what a marriage is supposed to do. And there doesn't have to be even be a bad guy and a good girl or a bad girl and a you know, good guy. People get married at a young age. Their expectations are totally different. They grow and they evolve in different directions and they outgrow each other. So it doesn't have to be because of your sexuality that your marriage is breaking up. So why do we need so much proof as opposed to other people? The only proof that they seem to need is that they're not happy. Why do we have to have more than that, do you think?
I think it comes from the rejection that we experience. We keep, you know, we keep searching in that marriage for love. I don't know, it seems like when you're rejected, you try that much harder.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe because we do personalize it. You know,
well,
maybe
we
because
do.
We are, you know, internalizing that the marriage isn't working because it's our fault. I mean, certainly in a number of cases, and I certainly understand this, some women are told, well, this marriage isn't working because of you. I'm happy in the marriage. You're the one who has the problem. You're the one who's not being supportive enough or understanding enough. You know, everything has to be your way. You know, I could be tired after a long day's work, and here you are, you want to be kissing me, and you're the last thing that that's the last thing I'm thinking about. I'm just looking to come home and relax. You know, so it's little messages like this that sound innocent enough in the beginning, they wouldn't necessarily equal gay. I mean, there's no way that we could say, oh, well, then he must be gay because he doesn't want to give me a kiss when he comes home from work. You know, so it's little things that start adding up into becoming bigger things. But I think it is a deterioration of how you feel inside, you know, yourself that maybe makes you feel more at blame for the problems in the marriage. Was that the case when you were married?
Yes, and I just kept trying to make a hopeless situation work. I didn't really know what was wrong, and the harder I tried.
And do you feel that you were blamed for the failure of the marriage while you were living it?
Yes. Yes. He did blame me for everything that he could blame me for. I mean, it was a daily breakdown. He was physically and very verbally abusive. It seems like I've read about the trauma bonding, and it makes sense. And I think I was in a trauma bond, and when I came out of it, I felt like I had been through a war zone.
Can you tell people what that means, trauma bonding?
It's when you bond to somebody that's abusing you, and you want comfort from the very person that's hurting you. And, you know, you can experience this, especially when you're in isolation with this one person. He's the only person you're around. And you do wait around for the crumbs, for the moments that they're nice to you. And you think, oh, well, they must love me.
And every time you get a crumb, you know, you're happy. I know one of the things that you posted that I'm putting in my newsletter that's coming out tomorrow, because I just love this saying so that people can cut this out and remember it. It says, settling for crumbs doesn't keep you fed, it keeps you starving. And I thought, boy, that is so on target. You know, we settle for the crumbs thinking that that'll make us feel better. But as soon as those crumbs are gone, we're starving again. You cannot live on crumbs in a relationship. Right?
Right. But they, you know, they'll throw those little crumbs out there to keep you hanging on and to keep you going.
We're looking for those kind words because you get to the point in that relationship where any kind word's going to be a sense of encouragement to you because you feel so deflated from these marriages and you haven't had any kind words. So I think this is very typical in marriages where there's such destructive behavior. In a marriage that's a successful marriage, people are constantly building each other up and they're looking for ways to support each other. It's not an accusation kind of a relationship. Like, if this isn't working, it's your fault. No, if this isn't working, it's your fault. You know, and it gets to that point where, you know, it's a matter of blame instead of acceptance and encouragement. And
right.
With these marriages, there's just no way that people can feel good about them. And as that, you know, therapist was telling me, how can anybody feel good about living with a husband who loves you like a sister when you want to be somebody's wife?
Right.
And that's really what it comes down to. And it's not just about sex. I mean, sex is an important part of every healthy relationship. And health does bond, and, you know, sex does bond people together and the intimacy of it. But there are couples where their sexual abilities become lesser as they grow older, where the need isn't as great, but they've already had years of it to build upon, to, you know, create that intimacy of, you know, between them. So they have a history of that. So it's not like you start out in the marriage and you have nothing going for you as far as building intimacy. But with these marriages, you start off and they're really flat within a short amount of time. And even though
yes,
some men can come home...
it definitely wasn't about sex. I mean, my marriage is definitely not about sex.
And that's the interesting thing. Marriage should be about sex. It shouldn't have to be about sex all the time, but sex is an important way of letting people know they love each other. You know, it shouldn't have to be just sex. It's making love to someone in a physical sense. And, in fact, you know, I was talking today with my friend Patsy Ray Dawson, who's going to be coming on the show in a few weeks. And, you know, Patsy is a works of marriages, you know, of Christians. You know, she's a Christian marriage counselor. And she's very adamant that, you know, sex is such an important part of any successful marriage. And it's biblically in there that people should enjoy sex. And that's what, you know, God wants all people to enjoy sex. I mean, she's very strong about that. But it's part of every successful marriage. And for those people who don't have that from the beginning, you know, it's different if you've had a very active, wonderful sex life, you know, making love through the years and something happens. But when you have to feel like you have to beg for it or that, you know, there's something wrong with you because your husband doesn't want to touch you, you know, that's not the way marriage is supposed to be. That's called rejection, and that's not what you do to somebody who you love. And that's why when you talk about women needing to find proof, the proof that your husband doesn't want to be intimate with you and doesn't love you enough to want to make love to you, that should be enough proof for you. You don't have
it
to catch him in bed. You just have to
right.
realize that he doesn't want you. Would you say that's true?
I totally agree with that. And I had many reasons to get out of that relationship besides him being gay. You know,
mm-hmm.
I should... You know, and I do blame myself for staying in that, but I was telling you about the trauma bond, and I
mm-hmm.
feel like that was stuck in, but, you know, and it took some time for me to come out of that since the divorce, but I'm doing much better now.
It's a long recovery period, and that's why I feel so bad when women say to me that they're told, well, get over it. As if it's that simple, you know, you've been mourning this for a year, for 2 years. You know, it's time to move on. You can't keep fixating yourself on it. People really have no idea what it's like to go through these marriages. And when most of these marriages end, you really love the person who your marriage is, you know, leaving. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of women, even if the marriages weren't great, they still love their husbands. And
yes,
some
and
people really
loved,
did have
I
good marriages.
I thought I loved my husband. I was heartbroken to leave. And, you know, I knew I was never going to see him again once I left there. And I was devastated.
Mm-hmm.
But, I
that's
mean,
right.
Now...
A lot of women really love their husbands. And I think that's why it's so hard for them to accept it. You know, I know, you know, one couple right now who's going through a very tough time with this. You know, they're just learning about it. And it does take time to finally accept it. Women can't understand it. They think, here, I thought I had a wonderful marriage. And okay, we didn't have the best sex life, but I know my husband loved me because he told me all the time he loved me. He would lay in bed and hold me. He would cuddle with me. You know, so a lot of people have sex lives that drop off after you have children. You know, that's what we're told. So people buy into that. But if everything else is going well, why would they want to break up their marriage? And, you know, they're very able to say, look, I can live with it. You know, if
yes.
you have these feelings, you know, I can turn my head the other way or just ignore it, or we don't have to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as long as you're not having sex with other men, and those men who get caught will say, of course I won't. I can live with it. That's the way we are because I love you. And women are naive enough to really believe that's going to happen, but like you were talking about the straight gay men, it never happens with them.
No.
You know, they're out there having sex with somebody, and sometimes, you know, like I say, even bringing home diseases to their wives, which is why about 20% of the women we work with have sexually transmitted diseases. And, you know, it's very devastating when you find out that that's your situation. So, you know, so many different variables of this, but it's never easy under any circumstances to leave a marriage. But especially in these marriages where women, you know, even if they've been mistreated, even if they feel, you know, that they're not made to feel good enough because they are internalizing that they're doing something wrong. It's not like when you have a marriage with straight people where they're constantly fighting, they're constantly yelling and, you know, saying, oh, this isn't going to work, you know, and they both agree. You know, it's not like the woman's internalizing it or the man's internalizing it. They're just unhappy, both of them. Where
right.
I think in these marriages, the women are internalizing, this must be my fault because my husband's not happy. I can't make him happy, and the husband's not disagreeing with that. Would you say that's probably likely why that could happen?
Yes. I was very confused in my marriage because of what you were just saying about the laying in bed and cuddling and the husband saying that he loves you. Mine did those things. Even though he could be abusive, he had moments, like I say, the crumbs. But, you know, it makes you very confused.
Uh-huh. Yep, the crumbs never really become that cookie. And I think it just kind of beats you down more and makes you want to try harder. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's why these marriages are a lot harder to get out of sometimes also. For those men who do tell their wives, you know, I just want to remind them that they can't expect that it's going to be, you know, accepted within like a 2-week or 3-week or 4-week period. You've got to give your wives the time to understand it, to grieve it, to decide what you're going to do. You must become responsible to them and for them when you're starting your new life. You know, no one's saying you shouldn't, you know, have your authentic life, but you have to do it in a way that makes sense for the whole family. You know, telling the truth is step one, and then making a game plan and realizing that you had a whole life to understand this, but your wife's just finding out, it's going to take her time. Wouldn't you say so, from the women that you've
wife will have so many questions, you know, what was real? Did you ever love me? Was anything real? Because you feel like your whole marriage was a lie.
Mm-hmm.
If my ex-husband could have been honest with me, I feel like, you know, I could have had closure. I could have been forgiving. I thought he was a friend.
Mm-hmm.
At first, you know, I felt like I was losing a friend. I no longer feel that way, Bonnie.
Right. But let me ask you this question theoretically. Let's say he would have been honest and he would have told you. And he would have said, look, Deb, you know, we've had a long marriage. And I know that you love me. You've been really good to me and you've been a wonderful wife. And you know that at times I'm frustrated and I just, you know, take my anger out on you. But there's a reason for it. And the reason is because, you know, I'm going to tell you now that I'm gay. Would you have felt better about that, knowing?
Well, you know, when I first got here and I heard that he made sexual advances, when I first left and came to Texas, we were still talking, and I heard he made sexual advances to a man we know, I was devastated, and I talked to him, and I was crying, and I said, I need help with this. I believe you're gay, and I'm going to need some help. He denied it, and the next time I asked him about it, he hung up on me and never talked to me again. So, yes, I think it would have made a big difference to me if he could have been honest. And I felt bad for him, too, for the years that he felt that he couldn't live an authentic life. And I don't
think a lot of our women at first have, you know, feels those feelings of sympathy, you know, towards their husbands. And I think those feelings can last if the husband stays a responsible father and ex-husband. You know, what I see too often is that these guys go off and they forget their families and they forget their responsibility to the families, and that only hurts things worse. You know, they need to try to stay as much of a family unit as possible, even if they can't be living together, but at least for when there's children involved. If there's no children involved, you can both say goodbye, and that's the end. Have a happy life. You don't have to remain friends if you don't want to. And, you may not want to, because you may go through all these feelings that we have and feel, well, if he was really a friend, he would have done the right thing by me.
Right.
But when you have children, it's really important to establish, you know, some kind of relationship where the children don't have to feel torn and feel as if they're the ones who have to pick and choose sides, because you can't do that to children without having them grow up with all kinds of emotional problems as well, right?
Right. I think if you have children, you need to do everything that you can to, you know, maintain that friendship and at least for the children.
At least a civil relationship. Now, not, that's not always possible, because I've seen instances where some men just make it impossible. They become extremely angry and they become extremely aggressive. And sometimes they use the children, you know, just to get back at their wives. And I don't want to make people think that this is a gay thing, because it's definitely not. Straight men do the same thing.
And in those cases, you need to have some strong boundaries and just keep it about the children. But if he's a good guy and, you know, you can remain friends and co-parent, then that makes it even better.
That's always your best possibility, I think. If you can. You know, it's not always possible, but at least try to not bring the children into it. Try to, you know, communicate yourselves. You can go for some after-marriage counseling. There's plenty of therapists who do counseling. So if you're a family unit, you can get along and learn how to communicate under your new circumstances. Because certainly there's so many challenges when you have, a gay husband who's also a gay father, as far as his relationships now with your children, you know, how that's going to pan out for the future with a new boyfriend. You know, I tell women that first we have to get used to the idea before, you know, we can talk about in a rational way to our children. And I tell gay men the same thing. Give your wife that chance to first understand it and know what she's dealing with and not be as emotional about it, like when you first tell her the news, because she's going to go through 500 different emotions, you know, making all kinds of bargains and making all kinds of ways that she can live with it. Why do we have to break up the marriage? You know, I can live with this. You know, we all go through that bargaining phase of what we can live with when we find out. But, you know, finally women have to come to that point where they're going to realize that doesn't matter what we want to live with. These men want to have their own lives, and they're entitled to have that, but not at your expense. You know, they have to be,
right.
Like I say, do the right thing by you. So, Deb, if people wanted to, let's talk about your book a little bit. It's available through Amazon, right?
Right. And Kindle for the e-book or Amazon for the paperback.
Okay, so they can find it, you know, it's either paperback or they can find it as an e-book. And your book talks about different signs of gay husbands, right?
Right. It's just signs that I missed in my marriage. You know, I was coming to terms with all the things that I missed and remembering things. And I started the blog, and then I put some of the blog together to make a book. But I guess it's easier in hindsight, you know, but for women that are confused, I think the book will help clear up some of that confusion.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully it will. And even though, like I say, Deborah and I both know that we have some angry, bitter people who are out there who are attackers of ours and who will look to defame our work, whether it be our books or support groups or chats, because they're very angry people who have their own issues, it doesn't stop us from helping those who really need the help, because that's what we're about. And no matter what people say about us, you know, those people who are detractors, which are primarily some angry, bitter men that we won't go into, and men who have their own issues, you know, it's a shame that people can't see the situation for what it is. It's one that's filled with pain for women and for the husbands as well, who are also suffering in these marriages, you know, who are not game players. They're just, you know, in a situation that they don't need to be in. But nothing is going to deter us from helping the women who come to us, and for us working through this and letting people know that these marriages are really not the marriages that are meant to be, and that people can get out of them and they can remain friends even after they're out of them for the sake of the children, or they can move on. You know, if there's nothing keeping you together, you don't have to be friends or feel obligated to be friends. Would you say that, Deborah?
Yes, and you're right. You know, this will not stop us from helping the women that need our help. I personally do not care what they have to say about me.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty open, and we tell about our lives and whatever else people choose to make up or to distort, you know, that's on them. I mean, people who know us know what we're about, and that's all I really care about. I don't care about the detractors. I care about those people that we're helping, and the tens of thousands of women who come to us for support each year who need it, that at least they have an outlet and they have a place to go with other women who understand them so they can move on in their lives. And that's what I think is most important. I did want to mention to women who are listening to this that I'll announce this also in my newsletter that's coming out, you know, in the next day or so, that I'm having a meet-up dinner in New York City on September 20th. It's a Tuesday evening. So for any of my New York, New Jersey women who would like to get together and spend an evening together, have somebody coming in from Australia, one of our straight wives, and I told her a few of us will get together with her. I'm really excited about that. So on the twilight of my senior citizen birthday that week, I will be trying to do my bucket list of things I want to do. And one of them is going to New York to spend the evening with some of our New York women. So if any of you are interested, yeah, I'm really excited. Please write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll get you the details. I'd love to see you if I know you and meet you if we haven't actually met before. I know a number of people in New York are always saying, when are we going to get together? Well, this is the time. I made the date, Tuesday, September 20th. So, Deborah, I would like to thank you so much for being a guest on our show, and hopefully you'll be back again soon. You've done an amazing job of encouraging women and being there for so many women who need someone, you know, when they're going through this. And I really think that nobody can really understand this like we can. No, because unless you've lived this kind of marriage, it's really difficult, right?
It is. It's unlike anything I've ever been through. And I was married and divorced once before. And I will say that being married and divorced, being married to a gay man, is way worse than my divorce from my straight husband.
Well, you know what? I was married and divorced before, too. And that wasn't a really good divorce either. It was kind of not very nice at all. But that's okay. It was a different kind of marriage. And it just shows you that when you're younger, you make inappropriate choices based on what your needs are at the moment. I tell women, don't beat yourself up too much because we all make choices depending on what our needs are at that time. As we evolve into adults and we get life experience behind us and we have all different kinds of experiences, we're not the same people we were at 18 or 20 or 25 or 30. You know, hopefully it's a constantly evolving situation. So we shouldn't really have to feel bad that, you know, we made poor choices. If we're improving our lives, we also have to improve our choices. And you can't beat yourself up. I always say, you made a bad choice. You know what? At that time, that's the choice you needed to make for your own happiness at that moment. So never feel bad about it, right?
And that's something we need to work on, too. We need to stop beating up on ourselves so much.
We have to start building ourselves up, not keep knocking ourselves down, right?
Right.
So I want to just say a get well wish to our dear friend Jen in Texas, you know, who's the strongest woman that I know, who's had some real challenges with her health this year, but Jen is such a fighter. And send love to my nephew Scott, who always listens to this show and, you know, uses it in his own life to make better decisions. Love you, Scott. And Deb, any shout-outs you'd like to make?
I'd just like to say hi to all the ladies that are listening from our group.
Yep, all of our ladies, all of our straight wives. And in my column coming up, you can read my new column on my new slogan, Straight Wives Matter. That's my new slogan now, Straight Wives Matter. And you can read about
That's
it in my
great.
Upcoming newsletter in the next day or so. So, Deborah, I'll look forward to having you back here soon again by October, hopefully, if that's okay with you.
That'll be great, Bonnie. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure, Deborah. You know I love you.
I love you, too.
All right, and good night to everybody. Have a wonderful week, and we'll
good
be
night.
Back soon. Good night.